we're back 262nd time, and we're just keep going. That's right. We're on a roll here at the Parish of the Patriots. Most of y'all I know are returned members of the congregation. I'm honored that you have found this show, you getting something out of it to the point that it's worth coming back and listening to again. If it was complete garbage, you'd be like, well, I listened to that. I ain't never doing that again. I'm proud of you. I'm honored that you've chosen to come back here. If you do happen to be someone tuning in for the first time, we do have a Christian-specific segment, the sermon, if you would. That's roughly the halfway mark of the show. Don't tune it out. Listen to that. That if you listen to nothing else, they're probably some of the return members. They should skip through this first part because it's just me being funny or talking about things that I find humorous or whatever. But tune for the whole thing. But for sure, stick with Christian specific segment. I think you'll get something out of it. And you know, as with everything else, like probably every other show you listen to, I do pass the plate around. If you get something out of it, ask that you drop something in the plate. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. It is very much appreciated. I have the ultimate privacy coin. That's right. Snail mail. I got snail mail. Don't have anything else up right now. I'm just doing this whole thing of kind of an experiment. I'm just doing snail mail. I got email down there. You can drop your notes too as well. So yeah, with that having been said, listener supporter mailbag. Mr. T's must have gotten... You know, see, the snail mail is the ultimate privacy coin, but sometimes your stuff is delayed. You know, it's like if you send in Bitcoin, but you got your miner fee or whatever that is, you got the fee too small, that stuff going to sit there and linger for weeks. See, snail mail works like that sometimes. Sometimes your stuff may get chewed up in the machine. It may take a while to get here, but I'm sure it will. But I did receive support here from Tony. No note here, but I did want to let Tony know I got it. And, of course, it is very much appreciated. This isn't actually listener supporter mailbag. It's just from an email, but I thought, you know, normally I just do listener support. But, see, if I just did listener support, I'm done with Tony. That's it. Tony is the guy. The guy this week. Tony's got center stage. Spotlight. Spotlight is on Tony. But I did get this email, and I wanted to use part of this as well. Hi, Dan. I just sent some shekels to Sven, James Costello, and Sam Malia. I see that Sam has gotten 56,000 pounds, which is great and much deserved. But I was saddened to see that Sven and Costello received less than 10,000 pounds each. I suspect that Costello is the least well-known of the three, and Sam's imprisonment has stolen the thunder on the patriotic alternative, or if I said it in British terms, patriotic alternative. Let's go back. Sven always say patriotic. I'm like, there's America, but we say patriotic. I'm sorry. Anyway, the patriotic alternative webpage. I also learned that Sam's wife was on with Alex Jones, and that can only help. Anyway, keep punching. That's from John. Thank you, John. Yeah, well, I continue. Of course, Dr. Johnson and myself, we don't let you forget about Sven. And, you know, all the daily national shows I have continued to put up, y'all well know, the Sven Longshank support links on those shows. We're going to keep, we're kind of in the home stretch here. We're hoping to see Sven released hopefully sooner rather than later. I'm hoping very much that we're kind of in a kind of a home stretch where maybe we'll see some resolution to that. And I always say, you know, I don't mention it really on this show as much because I do on the Daily Nationalist. But I mean, I'd like to say once again on Sven's behalf, I do very, very much appreciate your letters. He appreciates your letters, postcards, and of course, any financial support y'all have kicked his way. You know, as far as wrestling, this is the way these things work. You know, like I say, Sam is his case is kind of front and center and is getting all the attention. That's the way it works. And 6 months from now, people will be talking about somebody else or something else. That is just how these things, you know, how these things tend to go, you know, and it's not, I know the listener's not meaning it this way, but it's not a competition, you know, and it just highlights, you know, the various things, you know, going on in this world as far as, you know, people being literally punished for speaking the truth, for trying to stand up, for trying to do what is right. It is what it is, you know. And I know Sven is very thankful for the financial support he has received. This is going to give me, this is not just about, you know, people say, well, it is just about money. But when he gets out, this is going, you know, he had to give up everything when he went to prison. You know, he lost his place he was living, had to sell his, you know, basically he's going to come out with nothing. And what he has received by y'all's generous support, this is going to give him the ability. He can put, you know, a deposit down and rent a place. He'll have a roof over his head. Y'all did that. If y'all didn't send anything, then he would be having to somehow try to figure that out with no money because they took everything. You know, well, now he'll be able to put a deposit down and rent a place. You know, he'll be able to, you know, some of his stuff he'll, you know, I'm sure people are watching after, you know, it's in storage with somebody or whatever. I don't know the particulars, but y'all know, you just imagine, put yourself in his shoes. You're renting a place, you go to prison, you come back out, you got to start over somewhere. You know, he's basically unemployable. He's got to have to start. And y'all's generous support is enabling, going to make it where he can do that. And again, on his behalf and for myself, we appreciate it. I'm not going to go on and on about it, but I really do appreciate it. I kind of highlight this sort of thing on the Daily National shows, not so much on this one. You know, what I did want to say once again, on his behalf, we all of us do appreciate what y'all have done. Anyway, we got to keep on rolling. I've only burned 6 minutes. We got to keep on rolling. Biden did his State of the Union address. I record this over the weekends. You know, y'all know that. Most of y'all regular listen. I record this over the weekend. It airs on Tuesdays. Sometimes the content I talk about isn't exactly up to date because so many things go on. Biden come out and they managed to keep him sentient enough, I guess, to do a State of the Union. I didn't watch it. I imagine none of y'all watch it. Who cares? You know, why subject yourself to it? This is one of the failings of this entire fiasco they've got going, Biden, all the rest of it. Why bother listening? You know, who watches these 24-hour news stations anymore? You know, can you imagine sitting around and listening 2 hours of network news? Why would you do that? Why would you subject yourself to that? It's all lies. Hell, Fox News lies as much as all the rest of them. It's always funny when you're running conservatives like, yeah, I only listen to Fox News. I want to get the true scoop. And it's just like, okay, brah. You know, okay, brah. Whatever you say. You're getting that true scoop from Fox News. Just why listen? Why listen to Biden rattle on? We pretty much already know what his canned, prepared responses are going to be. The only reason you'd watch Biden make the State of the Union address is the only reason anybody watches NASCAR. You know, nobody gives a shit about NASCAR. You're sitting there watching cars go, a left turn, in a circle. Nobody gives a shit about that. Nobody's sitting there going, oh, look, so-and-so. He just moved 6 inches closer to the car in front of him. He's going to make a move. Of course, all the cars are the same damn car. They just put a different shell over it. Ain't nobody care about NASCAR. Only reason anybody watches NASCAR is what? For the wrecks. That's all anybody. That's the only time. I went to a NASCAR race one time because I got free tickets. Since nobody else wanted to go. And they're like, you want these free tickets? Sure. I ain't never gone. I'll go. There wasn't a single wreck at this NASCAR race. And that was some of the most boring shit I ever been to in my life. Circle. You could walk off, go wander around for 45 minutes, come back and be like, well, what did I miss? And it's like, well, the yellow car is still in front. The white car is now in third place. The blue car inched up and got in second place. And everybody else, who the hell even knows where they're at? The drivers are supposed to be the celebrity. You just cheering for that's your favorite sports team guy. Nobody watching NASCAR. I went to a NASCAR race and there wasn't nothing, wasn't a single wreck. And that was just important. The only reason you'd watch Joe Biden's State of the Union address is to see if there's a wreck, huh? You just waiting to see if halfway through the speech he's trying to say some profound thing about the Ukraine or something, and then just goes into a senile meltdown. about some gibberish from, I don't know, the 1960s or something, you know? That's the only reason you'd watch that. I didn't watch it. I ain't got no plans to watch it because otherwise it's just lies. I didn't need to subject myself to all that. Anyway, as far as I know, there were no NASCAR-style wrecks. There were no pile-ups. The Daytona 500 political speeches. But you know, I mean, hell, who knows? I mean, if there was, the media wouldn't tell you. They'd just give you the lucid clips. I mean, you think about it. For all we know, here's a little nugget for you to think about. Slosh around in your mind. Because we all know, Biden, you know, that poor guy don't even know where he's at. I mean, he can't get through, like if he walks in front of a camera, he can't get through 2 minutes of speaking. And the media say, oh, he made a gaffe again. Ain't no gaffe. Those ain't gaffes. His mind is gone. Here's a thought for you. They air the State of the Union. I don't know what night it was. Thursday night, I think. Wednesday, Thursday night. Like I said, I don't know. Don't care. Who's to say that wasn't all pre-recorded? You ain't going to know. The media sure as hell ain't going to tell you. What if over the weekend they held the State of the Union and everybody showed up and they filmed it, you know, so that they can cut everybody sitting in the audience like, cut. Oh, come on now, Mr. President. No, that's not how this line goes. All right. Take 17. Take it from the top. President Biden. You wouldn't know. You wouldn't know if the whole damn thing was pre-recorded. Because hell, if no one's ever going to tell you. The media wouldn't tell you that. The media wouldn't break the story. And if somehow it did get out, they said, well, we had to do that for national security reasons. America's many, many enemies out there could have targeted us. To keep us safe from the threat. From whoever the boogeyman, whoever this week's boogeyman is. If you think about it, Biden can't come out and talk for 2 minutes without blubbering around and showing how senile he is, and yet somebody makes these speeches. How'd that happen? They pull in some kind of trickery. Probably shit's probably pre-recorded. They make multiple takes. You know, maybe he sits there. Maybe they record it, and they just bring like a double out there to sit there and lip sync. I don't know. I'm just having some fun with it. And then of course there's Trump. Then there's Orange Man. Before the State of the Union address, I saw this deal where Trump said he was going to give a play-by-play commentary. You know, he was going to give play-by-play commentary, like a color commentary at a football game or something for Biden's State of the Union. I thought, you know, that might be kind of funny. That might be something actually worth watching. See, I got tempted to get sucked into the theater. And then I seen this like, well, if you want to hear President Trump's color commentary, you're going to have to tune in to Truth Social. Truth. My gosh, he's still doing Truth Social. Ain't nobody on no damn Truth Social. Like Trump trying to shill Truth Social. Ain't nobody on Truth Social. Truth Social. Oh, shoot. No, I didn't get to see the Orange Man's play-by-play color commentary. You know, Trump is conservatives. You know, they don't know what else to do. I said this before, you know, if we just get Trump in here. I said this on another show. I think it was one of the Daily National show. I had somebody ask me recently, you know, hey, are you on the Trump train again? And I'm like, no, no. The thing that amazes me about conservatives is they put all their hope in Trump. Now, I'm so tempted here to go off on a preaching about, you know, when Jesus warned that in the end times there were going to be many false Christs. You see, because the people have discarded God and thus they've discarded Christ. Whether they go to church or not, it's irrelevant. And so they invent these fake Christs. You see, we read that and you think somebody's saying, you know, somebody's telling you, I've seen Jesus Christ, he's over here. No, they're just talking about fake messiahs. Trump is going to save us all. They put all this faith in Trump, and they never consider. Usually, they never consider. I look at Trump, and I think, do these people not ever consider what he did to the January 6th people? You know, he threw them people under the bus. Remember, it was pretty obvious after January 6th went down, within a day or so of January 6th going down, you know, it wasn't real hard to read the tea leaves of what Team D was going to do with this fiasco. They were going to create this whole narrative of this whole insurrection. The media was hyping it. And Trump was still president. And he could have pardoned all of those people and saved all of those people from having their lives destroyed. The ones who have been thrown in jail in abominable conditions. He could have done that. It wouldn't have cost him a damn thing. Except the media calling him names, which they did that, of course, anyway. So it didn't cost him a day. Wouldn't have cost him a damn thing. And he didn't do it. Threw him under the bus. And people, these people run around now and they like, oh, we did get Trump in there. And they never consider he threw them people under the bus. Why wouldn't he throw you under the bus? When he gets in there, he's going to what? You know? Just like he stood up there and told them people, you know, we're marching down to the Capitol. He went back to the White House. We marching down to the, y'all get on down there. I got your back. I've got your back. Get on down. I've got your back. Get on down there. Threw him under the bus. Got track record. Bus throwing. Bus tossing his supporters. And these people, most silly manner, they put all their faith in Trump because they don't know what else to do. Got to keep on the voting thing. Got to keep on voting. Got no other choices. The orange man won't let us down. He come out the other day. It's like he's making every effort now to make sure everybody understands he's ready to play ball. He's making a deal. Remember, Trump's a deal maker. You know, we always talk about people making a deal with the devil. Trump, his whole thing, you know, his book was called The Art of the Deal. He is a deal maker. Even he goes out, he went out on TV the other day. I guess it was on Fox News, and they asked him about Israel's mass slaughter of civilians, and he says, Israel's got to finish the job. See, that's him making the deal. He's playing ball. You know what he ain't talking about? It's obvious we're getting war of some sort. Probably a lot of it. I mean, you can see it, you know? They're like trying to prepare, but they like teasing it. You know, they send it out. It's like before a anime airs or a movie, you know, you start getting trailers out like 6 months in advance, you know. They release the trailer for the newest season of, I don't know, Demon Slayer or whatever. And everybody goes and watches the trailers, see, you know, give a tease. We got all these trailers going on. You got Macron out there, you know. Macron come out and says, you know, we ain't ruling out. Putting boots on the ground. Boots on the ground. They already got boots on the ground. Everybody knows this. You see, they getting everybody. It's a trailer. You see, it's a teaser. They're going to show you a clip to get you excited about the new show. Putin come out late, here recently and said, you know, Americans think war is some kind of cartoon or something. You know, in other words, he said the same thing that I've said for some time. For the average American, war is something they watch on TV. It's like a sports game or TV show. You know, like Jack Bauer on that show 24, they watching Jack Bauer. He's going to go stop them. And that's true. They just teasing the latest episode. They're getting everybody hyped for when it breaks out. They get hyped. And Putin said the same thing that I've also warned, which is Americans may be fixing to find out real quick what it's really about. And I think they're going to fold. You know, people say, well, if that happened, there was actually a strike on America, like, they done, it's just, enough's enough. Russia launches a hypersonic missile and levels 6 city blocks surrounding some military or some, you know, military industrial complex facility. Are the American people going to rally around the flag? Well, when the American people start considering like their cities might start looking like the Gaza Strip, no, I think they're going to fold real fast. All that rah, rah, America, hell yeah, crap going to go out the window. It's real fun when you just watch it like a TV show. But when you start thinking, you know, my ship might get blown up, all of a sudden it's not so fun anymore. They teasing it. They get everybody ready. You know, Macron comes out and says that. And then all these other people, Schultz, that idiot in Germany, he come out and he's like, oh, no, 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 we're definitely not going to do that. Only when Russia released the recording they got of these high-ranking German generals talking about how they're going to send these weapons, these Taurus missiles, which Scholz had been saying they weren't sure they were going to send yet. Scholz didn't even know that happened. Life's a bitch when you're just a puppet sitting in there. You know, you're just the body that goes out in front of the cameras. You know, he was back there telling whoever's in charge, like, hey, y'all got to give me a heads up. I look stupid out here. Like, I don't even know what's going on. Y'all can be hitting me out of left field with this. Y'all got to let me know what y'all up to so I know how to react to it. I can prepare my script, get my makeup on. They teased it. They teased the war. So people are ready for the debut. Whenever it goes live. I don't know. It's the funny thing about all this theater is that it is so obviously theater, and you got people that still haven't caught on, you know? And it's obvious that you have two factions right now kind of bickering with one another. You know, you got one faction wants to double down on the Ukraine project. The other faction wants to send everything to Israel. They kind of had a little power struggle here. Where are we going to spend all their resources? Ukraine project, or everything's got to by default go to Israel? We have this political theater, and you notice we don't have a single candidate that's out there saying, you know, we need to not support Israel. You? Oh, wait. What's that? Some of y'all thought what? Oh, RFK Jr., whatever his name is, he was going to be that guy. No, he ain't that guy. You supposedly have all of this democracy, the democracy, and the fools that think that has something to do with voting. You know, that has something to do with like what the people want. And you notice that out of all your choices, you ain't got a single candidate running that says, yeah, we shouldn't give a damn thing to Israel. And it's all across the board, you know? Where are all the Team D politicians saying we shouldn't send nothing to Israel? See, because they work the same way. Conservatives always be getting disenchanted, you know, because they elect these people. I remember when Ted Cruz got elected. Boy, he was the people's candidate. He was going up there to Washington to start speaking up for the people. Ted Cruz. But see, Team D followers, they get the same treatment. You know? Where are all the Team D politicians saying that, you know, we need to actually cut off any support for Israel? Where are they at? They ain't none. They all real quiet. I think one of them voted to abstain or some crap. I don't know. They all unconditionally, and you got people still believing in it, still believing in the system. I see where some pro-Palestinian protesters, you know, were hounding what's her name, Cortez, AOC. You know, demanding, you know, how come you won't condemn Israel or something like that? And she's like, I've already done that. She's saying something like that. I've already done that, and y'all just gonna pretend I didn't? It's like, no, you didn't, bitch. Ain't nobody, everybody knows you've been sitting there quiet as a mouse. Ain't found a thing. You people still getting slaughtered. If it's supposedly a democracy, and if it supposedly had something to do with the will of the people in voting, where's the candidate? Because there's a significant portion of the population that doesn't think that, you know, we should be sending money and bombs to Israel so they can slaughter Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Where's the candidate to represent these people? There isn't one. I speak about them because it's entertaining, you know, these political things. It's entertaining just to me. I'm interested to a certain level. But yeah, I've said before, and a lot of people disagree with me, I long abandoned any thought of quote unquote waking people up. You know, and I don't believe in that because it's so obvious. I mean, it's so obvious and in your face now. You know, if somebody doesn't see this theater for what it is, You can wake them up. They don't see it because they're either, there's only two possibilities. I've thought about this. I've racked my brain about it. I've considered, I have pondered upon these things. It's so obvious. All of this is so obvious and in your face. Now, the mask is off, how this system works. It's so in your face at this point that if you don't see it, there's only two possibilities I can come up with. There's only two possibilities. A, you're too incredibly stupid to wrap your mind around, at which point it's a waste of time. You know, if somebody is so damn stupid that they can't figure it out when it's this in your face, you're wasting your time. You know, like the guy said in that old movie, you know, some men can't be reached. What we have here is a failure to communicate. Some men just can't be reached. If somebody is so damn stupid that they can't figure it out now, they ain't going to figure it out. I ain't wasting my time on somebody that damn stupid. Now, the other possibility is they do get it. They do see it. But they are just willfully not looking at it. You know, they just willfully and making the conscious decision to be in denial. You know, they just look, they see it, it's in their face. On a certain level, they understand it, but they're going to deny it anyway. They're going to turn away. They're not going to look at it. They're going to say, I'm just going to go along. I'm going to turn away. And I know what's going on. Well, you can't wake them up. They already know. They're just choosing to go along with it because it'd be too much of an inconvenience. It'd be too much of a hassle. It'd be too mentally stressful to look at it for what it is and to say, well, this is a mess. Well, it looks like we're not going to vote and fix any of this. Then we tinker on the edges and somehow fix it. You know? I mean, really, if somebody does see it and they're just choosing to look away, you're not waking them up. You're wasting your damn time. So I don't know. Somebody says, we got to wake people up. And I get a lot of well-meaning people who believe that. And I, you know, hey, more power to you. You know, this is just my opinion for me personally. I don't demand anybody else conform their opinions to my own. But likewise, I don't feel obligated, you know, to mimic other people's viewpoints either. I think it's a waste of time. I think it's a fool's errand if you think, you know, quote unquote, wake people up. When we're at this stage, it's just simply in your face. It's all an absurd theater. It's in your face. I can only think of those two possibilities. You're either too damn stupid to figure it out, in which case you're a waste of time, or B, you know, and you're just going along with it anyway. That's it. That's all I can imagine. So how are you going to wake somebody up from that? Yeah, it is a waste of time. It's in your face. It's in your face. Like I say, I talk about these things. I continue to talk about these things just because for me personally, I find it entertaining. And I do believe that the truth in and of itself has intrinsic value. So I think there is a reason, there should always be a motivation to speak the truth, regardless of anybody's believes it or not. Just the truth in and of itself has intrinsic value. But that's it. I'm trying to wake nobody up. It's a fool's errand. Anyway, we're going to get into the Christian specific. We got to keep on rolling. Get into the Christian specific segment. Let's do this thing. Y'all know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon at the Parish of the Patriots. You know, many times when I set out to record the Christian specific segment, I start off with all these good intentions. You know, I might have a lot of things jotted down. I'm like, I'm going to try to hit all of these things. And what'll happen is we'll get to talking about one specific thing and really bearing down on it, and the other things get neglected. And oftentimes we don't ever even get back to those other things, which I thought would be great to talk about. Today is yet another such of those occasions. I've got quite a few things we might get into today, and what's probably going to happen is the usual thing, which is I get to bearing down, we get talking about a certain thing, and we just keep rolling with it, and we don't get to a bunch of the other stuff. But we'll see how it goes. I do have a lot of little things, a lot of things I thought we'd kind of touch on today in our Christian specific segment. But again, we'll just kind of see, how it goes. One of the things that is really interesting to me is so many things in one part of the Bible relate to other part of the Bible. They really, the more you study and the more you put your mind towards understanding these things and you read your Bible, you begin remembering. You know, I said before that I remember being hung up on, you know, people that had high memorization skills, and they would sit there and try to impress you with, you know, 2 Chronicles chapter 4, verse 13 says, you know, and I was always amazed, like, it's such a big book. How does he remember all of those verses? But I've come to realize as I've gotten older that those things are large. That's largely an irrelevant thing. If you don't really, what's important is really understanding what is written, not being able to cite a few verses off your mind, off the top of your head. Also, I've come to realize that those people doing that, by and large, they have a handful of those things that they could rattle off at you to impress you. If you pulled one out and you'd be like, what about Numbers chapter 12, you know, verse 30, they'd be like, oh, I'm going to have to look that up. Anyway, as you go there and read your Bible and study your Bible and spend your lifetime doing this, you will begin remembering things, and you'll read things and these other verses, these other things you've read, and you start really realizing how it really all is related. Like, this relates to, you just have one of those boards up like on a crime-solving show, and they have the yarn stretching from here to here. It's kind of like that in your head. You read something that was relating to something else, but then after a while, you read something and you think, you know, that relates to that. It is written, for instance, an example. It is written here, and it is written in the Bible. You know, we're all pretty familiar with the saying, a little yeast works its way through the whole dough. You know, when you think about how yeast works, if you're vaguely familiar, maybe your mama, your grandmama used to bake bread and used to watch her. She put the yeast in and set the bread up and cover it and wait for it to rise up. And the yeast will work its way through the dough. I was thinking this relates to, you know, also towards sin itself. You see, sin starts with little stuff. You know, it starts with little stuff. When you look at somebody or you read about somebody who has, for instance, gone off the rails and committed some huge, like, sin that's so bad that even the world takes pause and says, wow, why would somebody go and do that? They want you to believe, and the narratives will always be that this person woke up one day and went out and decided to go do this thing. But that's not how it works. It started somewhere way back there. You know, you got to keep a check on sin, because a little sin gets in, a little yeast works its way through the whole dough. You keep an eye on you keep your eye out for little sins. Instead of brushing them off, you nip that stuff in the bud. When somebody goes out and commits a really atrocious sin, you know, yeah, most people aren't going to get to that level. But you have to understand, that person didn't get to that level by just waking up one day and deciding to go commit sin like that. It's like if you watch one of those fat people shows, you know, where they're trying to lose weight, and they roll them in there, and this person, like, 600 pounds, talking about, doctor, I woke up today and realized, like, oh, I might have a problem. Like, you woke up today? Like, when you were 300 pounds, there wasn't any, like, alarm bells going off. You know, you originally weren't that big a person. When you hit 200 pounds, maybe you should have been like, hey, wait a sec. I'm looking in the mirror here, and I'm kind of getting a little roll. Might want to work on getting that knocked off. But you waited till you were 600 pounds and decided, hey, there could be an issue here. Well, of course, that's ridiculous. It's a process, and that's how sin is. When you see somebody who's completely engulfed in sin and ate up with sin, they can just wake up one day. And 600 pounds, wake up one day and they just completely swallowed up, living in filth, living in sin, being a complete degenerate. It started somewhere back there. Little yeast works its way. You start with the little sin. The point being, for a believer, for you as believers, as you try to walk an upright life and to get more Christ-like and you get closer to Jesus, as you do that, you're going to find yourself in a place to where now you're having to watch out for the little stuff. You know, you realize that stuff that before you were as far along as you were on your journey, you didn't get much, you know, you didn't pay much heed to, you didn't even give it much notice. But you realize when those things pop up now and you're like, hey, wait a second, you know, yeah, it isn't a big thing, but it's still, you know, pertaining. I don't want to let it get started. You know, now this isn't to be confused. This isn't to be confused with this notion. You know, I reflect back, and I do obviously here fairly often. I'll reflect back on when I was a child, and I would go to church and the different things they would teach us, you know, as children, and that I look back now and I'm think, you know, that just wasn't correct. They were doing the best they could, you know, but you go to church, you go to Sunday school, and they would teach you these different things. And I remember they would tell us that all sin is just as bad in the eyes of God. I am paraphrasing more or less, but they would basically tell us all sin. They would say, you see, because we have to have Jesus, because if you commit one sin, you're just as condemned before God. And thus they would say, all sin is the same before God. So if you sin just a little bit, it's as bad before God as if you sin a lot. Now, even as a child, this did not set right with me. It didn't, and I went many years without really paying it a whole lot of thought. But this notion, this idea that every sin is equally bad before God has never sat right with me. Well, now as I've matured, I realize that's because that's not correct. That implies that God is unjust. If theoretically the only sin you'd ever committed is, you know, when you were 10 years old, you shoplifted a candy bar at the store. Other than that, you never sinned your whole life. But you're just as condemned as a serial killer because it's all just as bad before God. Well, that, come on now. That paints God as being unjust, as just strictly being like just, I don't know, completely unjust. You would say that's not fair. That's unjust. Why would somebody who's only committed this sin treated equally bad as somebody who's done a whole lot of sin? What they should have said is, we seek Jesus to be under grace. If we are not under grace, if we are not in Christ, then we're judged under the law. And this is why we seek him now, so that we're not judged under the law and going forth. Instead of telling us, there's these impressionable kids that, you know, you're going to get cast into hell for every little thing you do, whether it's big or little. As if every sin is equal in the eyes of God, when obviously it's not, because again, God is just. But every sin starts from somewhere. Jesus said, you know, that it is written, do not commit adultery. But I say that any man who looks lustfully on his neighbor's wife has committed adultery already in his heart. You know, he's saying the same thing. It starts from somewhere. You don't just wake up one day and roll over and there's your neighbor's wife buck-ass naked in your bed while her husband's out of town. It didn't just happen. You didn't just wake up one day, whoa, look, where'd my clothes go? What am I doing? Why am I grinding around on my neighbor's wife? It didn't just happen. It started with you looking over there at her like, you know, well, it don't hurt to look. She pretty fine. He doing all right hitting that. And I wouldn't mind hitting it. See, that's where it starts. It's where you plant the seed. You catch yourself. You know, a man's a man. You're going to have your earthly desires. You got to catch yourself. Be like, man, what am I doing? No, we ain't even going to start that crap. We ain't going to start that crap. Anyway, starts. This is what he was saying. You know, people read that and it's like, so you're getting cast into hell just for looking at this woman. No, it's not what he's saying. He's saying it starts. You ain't going to wake up out of the blue buck naked. The neighbor's wife just, wow, I wasn't expecting this to happen. No, it starts with entertaining that thought. It starts from little sin. It starts a little bit. Little yeast works its way through the entire dough. I said I was going to try to talk about several different things today. Let's go look at the in the New Testament, the book of John. We're going to read several. We're going to kind of jump around. I want to start off with John chapter 1. We'll do the first several verses here. I'll stop when I feel like it. And it's written, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and life was the light of men. And the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. Now, this kind of that opening passage in the book of John, for a lot of people, that's kind of, I mean, you kind of understand how it relates to Christ, but it's also kind of, I don't know, it kind of reads like a poetic mystery or something. Now let's jump over to we're staying in the book of John, but we're going to jump to chapter 12, and we're going to do verses 44 through 50. And I think this, and we're doing this because I think this kind of gives us a little more context to what we just read, those opening passages. Jesus cried and said, he that believeth on me believeth not on me, but on him that sent me. And he that seeth me seeth him that sent me. I am come a light into the world, that whosoever believeth on me should not abide in darkness. And if any man hear my words and believe not, I judge him not, for I came not to judge the world, but to save the world. He that rejecteth me and receiveth not my words hath one that judgeth him, the word that I have spoken. The same shall judge him in the last day, for I have not spoken of myself, but the Father which sent me, he gave me a commandment that I should, what I should say and what I should speak. And I know that his commandment is life everlasting. Whatsoever I speak, therefore, even as the Father said unto me, so I speak. Now, let's kind of go back through this. So I wanted to just read through it one time. And then I thought we'd go back through here and really kind of pick this apart a little bit. He that believeth on me believeth not on me, but on him that sent me. And he that seeth me seeth him that sent me. Now, we want to keep in mind what we already read at the very first of the book of John. You know, the Word was with God. The Word, all things were created through him. This makes sense, right? You see Jesus, who believe in Jesus, you believe in the one who sent him. You see him, you've seen the Father. They are interconnected because of what he's doing. You're seeing the works of the Father, and you know the Father. You know, they, at one point, the disciples are like, well, show us the Father, and then we'll understand, then we'll believe. And Jesus is like, do you not recognize the Father? Do you not recognize me already? I've been with you all this time. You see what he's doing. You hear what he's saying. You are understanding. You are seeing the Father through Jesus Christ, through his works, through his deeds, through his miracles, the just immense depths of the teachings. The Word was with God. Everything was created through him. It says in the book of Genesis, God spoke, let there be light. He spoke. What does that mean? The Word, through what God spoke, let there be light. You see, he was with God in the beginning. So what we just read earlier, he was with God in the beginning. God spoke it, and it's relayed to us as he spoke it. And we think of just simply verbiage, you know, his word. God took an action. God took the action and created the world, created time. He took the action through Christ. This was the part of God that he took. You understand? It's a part of God. And Jesus is saying, if you've seen the Father, if you've seen me, if you believe in me, you're believing in the Father. Let's keep going. I am come a light into the world, that whosoever believeth on me should not abide in darkness. It is written elsewhere, Jesus says, you know, I bring light, you know, but the world rejected the light and love darkness. I find it interesting if you were to think of this in the terms of light being truth, okay? Light being truth and thus darkness being lies. You see, the people rejected the light because they loved sin. When people sin, they're in the darkness because they're covering up their sin. And if you keep that as a mind, you keep it in mind to think of it in terms of truth versus lies. See, people love the darkness. They love the lies because they love sin. If you've been off sinning, if you've been off committing sin, and somebody says, hey, where you been? You're not going to go tell them what you've been doing, are you? You're going to say, oh, I've been off doing this, that, or the other filthy sin. No, you're going to lie. You see, you're covering, you're using the darkness to hide your sin. You love the darkness. You have to, it draws you into the darkness. If you've been out doing the righteous work of God and somebody says, hey, what have you been doing? You're not going to lie about it. Be like, well, I've been out here doing the righteous work of God, you know. Or if you've just been doing what you do, you know, hey, where you been? Well, I've been out working in the field. I've been out checking the cattle. You don't need to lie about it. Why would you lie, right? If you ain't been up to no good, you don't have a reason to lie. If somebody says, hey, where you been? You know, you come home to your spouse and your spouse says, hey, where you been? You know, you've been out working. You just say, well, I've been out working. You ain't got a reason to lie. But you've been out laying up with your neighbor's wife. You're going to be like, oh, well, you see, I had some stuff going on back at the office, and there's one coworker, they wanted me to go have some drinks, and you see, the darkness is the lies. You suck into the darkness. You love the darkness because you're trying to cover up. You're trying to cover up that sin. Man who's living right ain't got a reason to lie about what he's been up to. You see, that's why men love the darkness and they rejected the light, because they're trying to cover up their sin. Jesus is saying, whoever believeth on me should not abide in darkness. You're not going around without a clue, living in lies. You see, we seek the truth. A man who's, if you can't find the truth, Jesus, it's written elsewhere. This is why if I really got bogged down into stopping and reading the passages every time, we'd never get through it. So I just wind up saying, well, it's written elsewhere. And I try to do this off the top of my head, you know, but it says, you know, whoever's walking in darkness, Jesus says, whoever's walking in darkness, he knoweth not where he goes. He doesn't know where he's going. That's how this life is. Jesus says truth. You walk in the light. You should not abide in darkness. You can't know where you're going if you can't see where you're going. And you can't see where you're going in life if you're just surrounded by and walking in lies. You gotta, if you gotta figure life out, in other words, to figure out where you're going in life, you've gotta know the truth of the matter. You gotta, to fix any problem, you gotta understand it, right? Y'all are problem solvers. Y'all fix plenty of problems in your life and you understand. Until you figure out the truth of the matter, how this thing works, how this system does what it does, why this, what's this program even designed to do, whatever problem it is you're trying to solve, first you got to get to the truth. You got to figure it out. If all your instruction manuals, if all your mentors, if all your teachers, all they do is lie to you, you're never going to solve the problem because you're walking in darkness. If you're surrounded by lies, you're never going to solve the problem because you don't understand the truth of it. Jesus says he is the light. He is the truth. If you're walking in him, you're walking in truth. You're going to be able to figure these things out then. You're not abiding in the darkness. You're not abiding in the lies. Let's continue on. We're at verse 47, going back through this again. Jesus continuing to speak. And if any man hear my words and believe not, I judge him not, for I came not to judge the world, but to save the world. His purpose here is the purpose of bringing about the new covenant, of bringing about the system of grace. He says, I didn't come to judge the world, I've come to save. My purpose here is to bring about the process of grace that man can finally fulfill his whole and God's whole intended purpose of starting this in the beginning. We read, God created the world. But how often does anybody ever ask, well, why did he decide to do that? I mean, he doesn't do anything without reason. What was the plan? This was the original plan. It got side railed. But now under grace, under Christ, that's why it's the fulfillment of the law. It's the fulfillment of all of God's plan when Jesus came into the world. Now, under grace, we can finally fulfill what God originally started all of this for, that we can go through the process, you know, go through the forging, however you want to think of it, the process being refined under grace. Now, Jesus said, I judge him not, for I came not into the world to judge, but to save the world. Now, the MCC reads this like, you know, oh, see, there's not going to be any hell. Not going to be any hell. Of course, we'll get to that here in just a minute. Jesus is saying, my purpose here is not to judge the world. I'm here to establish grace so that the believers through faith are saved. You see, he doesn't have, his purpose at that time was not to judge, because that's already in place. That's what the law was for. This is where the MCC gets things so messed up, because they pretend like the law has like been abolished, when Jesus said, I've not come to abolish the law, but to fulfill it. Jesus was very clear about this. And then they act like, oh, well, the law has no meaning anymore. But that contradicts what is written. You see, I didn't come to judge the world, because that's already established. We'll get to go. Let's keep going here. He that rejecteth me. Now, he just said, you know, if you hear my word and believe not, I judge him not, for I came not to judge the world, but to save the world. He that rejecteth me and receiveth not my words, what I've come to do, hath one that judgeth him, the word that I have spoken. The same shall judge him in the last day. Now, remember what we read at the beginning, the word was with God. You see, the law, God's law, this also came from Christ. So many churches now, they read like, well, see, Jesus, the law, none of that stuff counts anymore. The law came from Jesus. Jesus says, the words I spoke. What words is he speaking about? The law. He spoke the law. Remember, the word was with God at the beginning. God created all things through him. Where do you think the law came from? Who was speaking the law? Does that make sense? Continue, verse 49, for I have not spoken of myself, but the Father that sent me, he gave me a commandment. I was trying to look through my bifocals, and I got on that. They're lineless bifocals, but you get that little fuzzy spot, and all of a sudden, it all just ran together. This is one of them old school King James, you know, where Jesus' words are in red. It really got fuzzy. I totally broke the mood there. Sorry about that. Let's start over, for I have not spoken of myself, but the Father which sent me. He gave me a commandment that what I should say and what I should speak. See, he's connected to the Father. This goes back to the very first part that seems like a poetic riddle of some sort. And I know that his commandment is life everlasting. Whatsoever I speak, therefore, even as the Father said unto me, so I speak. Just saying, it's all related. This is why he said, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. You know, you've heard my words. You've heard the word of the Father. The disciples at the time were perplexed. Show us the Father. Do you not get it yet? Again, this relates back to that very beginning that sounds like a riddle or some sort. The word was with God. It came from him. The law is not separate from Jesus. It came from Jesus, and it remains. Again, Jesus fulfilled the purpose of the Lord, the whole purpose of why we're here. Under grace, we're able now, despite our own weakness, despite our sin, to fulfill our purpose, which is to be refined, which is to be forged, which is spiritually grow, which is to be ready to enter the kingdom of God. If you can do it while you've got this stone of your own flesh tied around your neck, weighing you down, it's like a trainer and they hang weights on themselves and they're out there running with the weights on, you know, because they know when it's race day, they ain't gonna have them weights on. They're going to feel light and they're going to be able to run. That's how this life is. If you can get through the process, despite all the sin, all the temptation, all of the darkness surrounding you, trying to suck you in, and you reject all of that, for the light, and you enter the kingdom of God, you are there. When the stone is coming, when you take the weights off and it's race day, you're ready to go. Ain't nothing going to turn you. The devil won't have nothing else. You see, when Satan rebelled, he took like a third of the angels with him. They rebelled. So it makes sense. God has a system now with men. This is why it says we will have authority over angels. Because there's zero chance. Once you get through this thing with all the BS and all the weight of your own weakness, the weight of this flesh, your sinful desires hanging around your neck, in spite of that, you get to the kingdom of God, you're just going to be like, whoa, it's race day. Take the weights off. There's nothing that can sway you. You're tried. You're true. You've passed the test. You've passed the test. You've gone through. You've proven yourself by your deeds. But see, none of that process would be possible except for God's grace through Jesus Christ. For everybody else who rejects Jesus Christ, again, God treats them fairly. God is just. I've said this before, because again, I think a lot of the false teachings that a lot of churches, denomination, whatever, however you want to put it, you know, treats, like I was saying earlier, like every little sin is the same before God. So whether you're a serial killer who's murdered 28 people, you know, or you lied about eating that piece of cake, it's the same before God, which portrays God as unjust. God is just. For those not under grace, not fulfilling their purpose, they're judged under the law. They're judged under the law. They're judged fairly. Nobody is going to be treated unfairly. They're not. Everybody's going to get judged fairly. Judged under the law. And this too came from Christ. Unlike the feel-good MCC, when Jesus says, I've come not to judge the world, that's because he already did that. He already did that earlier. That was all set up with the law. Didn't mean now nobody's got to worry about being judged. We can all just wallow in our sins as long as we show up on Sunday and listen to the, I don't know, rock and roll concert and get entertained and listen to a preacher tell us all about how good we are and give us a motivational speech. As long as we do all of that, we don't got to worry about nothing. We don't have to put any effort in because we said the words. Because Jesus would never judge us. Oh, Jesus said, I've came not to judge the world. That's because he already did that. If you were at work and somebody said, hey, are you doing this, that, or the other? You'd say, no, I already did that. I did that yesterday. I'm not doing that now. It doesn't mean you didn't do it at all. You already did that. You doing that? No, I'm doing this. Oh, okay. Because I already did that. I did that yesterday before I left, before I clocked out. Does that make any sense? Jesus already did that. I came not to judge the world because he already did that. That was done a long time ago. Because guess where the law came from? God spoke it. What did we just read at the beginning of John? The word was with God. So the law was spoken. The law was also through Jesus Christ. He already judged. He already did that. That's what the law is for. This time I came to establish grace, to fulfill God's original intention, original purpose with this whole exercise, so that those who do come into the kingdom of God are tried, true, tested, they're ready, there's zero chance they're ever going to rebel. You've been through this life and proven yourself. You can have authority over angels because there's nothing going to sway you once you're cut free of the weight of this flesh. Once you're cut free, there ain't nothing going to move you. There ain't nothing the devil, anybody else could come up to you and say, hey, I know you got a good here in the kingdom of God, but listen to this deal I got for you. You'd be like, looking at one of the angels, you'd be like, let me borrow that sword. Here, let me have that. Hey, what you doing? Come at me with some crap like that. Nothing going to sway you. Try and truth. This fulfills God's purpose. The whole reason why he created this box, this time, this little area we live in, this thing we go through of time. Anyway, We got through a few things. It's interesting. You really look, I promise you, and it takes a long time. I've been at this for a long time, and it's still a process. I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed of how much of my life it has taken to get just as far as I am now, you know, which I don't think is very far along, quite frankly. I've been so slow. It's embarrassing that it's taken me this long. I'm telling you, it's a long process. It's a lifelong process. Don't get discouraged. You know, don't be like, well, I've been a believer for 2 years and you know, I still don't get a lot of this stuff. That's normal. It's a lifelong process. But as you work through it, as you study, as you read your Bible, and it doesn't matter. It's like, well, I read through this whole book and ain't none of that made no sense to me. It's fine. Keep at it. Because as you spend your lifetime doing this, you'll start seeing more to more. It all starts making sense. You'll be like, hey, wait a minute. I'm remembering now that time I read this entire different passage from an entire different part of the Bible. But you know what? That's kind of tied to this. It kind of makes sense. I can see that. It'll happen. It'll start to come together. It makes sense. It's a lifelong process. You're never going to stop. This is your entire life. You're destined to do this, to struggle. You know, struggle through these things to try to understand. This is why you're here. There's no other reason. You're not here to be slave cattle, to make money for bankers, to feed the system. That's not your purpose. You're not here for the purpose of paying bills. You're not here to, you know, serve the system, whatever nonsense. This is the reason you're here, to spend this entire life learning and figuring this stuff out and growing. Is it? None of the rest of that other crap matters. Everybody thinks it all matters. Everybody gets so caught up in this crap and they think it matters. It doesn't matter because it's all going to end. This is just temporal stuff. This is just worldly bullshit. It doesn't matter. All of this is going to end. Everybody gets all whipped up. And, oh my gosh, look at what's going on. Like, yeah, it's crazy what's going on. Aren't you emotionally wrapped up about it? No, I'm not. I care. In the sense of I care what's right and what is the truth. Obviously as believers, we're in conflict with the world because we try to walk in truth and the world is all about lies and darkness. That fact is made more clear now in these clown world times than ever before. The lies are blasted at us from all directions. The darkness is blasted at us from all directions. The beckoning to walk in the darkness is everywhere, and the demands, even demands that we walk in the darkness and accept their lies, is everywhere. But it doesn't matter. It's what it means to say Jesus already defeated Satan. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how dark the darkness gets. If any little bit of light is always going to cut through it. The weakest of light cuts through that darkness. It does not have power. The darkness does not have power. In fact, the darker it is, that flickering light, it looks brighter. Stands out in contrast. Anyway, we'll wrap up on that note. I hope you got something out of our discussion today, especially the Christian-specific segment. I always say this is the reason I do this show. This the Christian-specific segment is the reason. I enjoy the first part. Don't get me wrong. I enjoy the discussion in the first part, but this is the core of the show. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed everything. I hope to see you here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.